What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Israeli Major General Doron Almog, the 2016 Israel Prize winner for his life work with autistic young people and his founding of a rehabilitation village for mentally challenged Israelis and others in need of assistance. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Too Jewish Mavina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. What do we really value in our public life, and how do we demonstrate those priorities? This has been a tumultuous period for politics in America, to say the least. Many of us have poured hours and hours into the long and bitter election campaign, either actively supporting a candidate or party or resisting one, or simply following and responding to all the coverage in the many media now available. But after all the sound and fury, we realize that no matter how compelling an election year can be, there are greater and higher matters even than whom we elect for president or who controls the offices of the U.S. government. The events that led to the holiday of Hanukkah are a testament to that truth. In the period of the Syrian-Greek domination of Israel under the Seleucid Empire, popular politics and culture were at war with the traditions and values of Judaism. More than 2,000 years ago, a Hellenistic king sought to replace belief and ethics with politics and culture rooted in ego, not morality. It took courage and commitment for the Maccabees to resist Antiochus and reclaim their great spiritual heritage. In that time, the temple was desecrated, ritual offerings were eliminated or paganized, but a new institution arose that focused not on politics but on purpose. Not on speeches, but on study. Not on faction, but on faith. The first synagogues developed as a response to the lost ethics of the general culture. They quickly became the place where Jews gathered to study, discuss, pray, and provide assistance to one another. And even after the temple in Jerusalem was cleansed and rededicated, synagogues continued to grow and spread throughout the world. They became and have remained the places where our greatest ideas are explored intellectually and spiritually, in true community. Today, we are experiencing a similar situation in our country. Our attention is drawn to the elaborate expressions of popular culture, to political and social issues that ebb and flow with time and tide, but the higher values we hold, the greater beliefs that demonstrate our true commitments, are not usually reflected in the latest election result or the hottest movies or music. They are best found somewhere else, in the synagogue. People always wonder how it is that Jews have survived for so long. What's the source of our people's vitality over 3,800 years of existence? What's the secret to the Jewish ability to remain intact when no other religion or culture has endured from antiquity all the way to today? How have we preserved our traditions and ideals from the Bronze Age to the iPhone era? The fact is that for the past 2,000 years, the principal source of life, learning, and community in Judaism has been the synagogue, whether it's called a temple, a congregation, a shul, or a kehillah. The synagogue is the only institution that guarantees that Judaism will survive and thrive from one generation to the next. In times of joy or sadness, of peril or celebration, it's the synagogue that's the single indispensable institution in Jewish life. There are certainly many excellent Jewish organizations at work in the world that do good and important stuff. Our synagogues work closely with many of them regularly and partner with lots of Jewish organizations in a variety of ways, but if, God forbid, all of these other Jewish organizations, federations and foundations and JCCs and Hadassahs and JNFs and so on, if they all suddenly disappeared and we only had synagogues left, Judaism would survive and ultimately succeed. On the other hand, if all of these fine Jewish organizations continued to function, but we were forced into even one generation without synagogues, Judaism would simply disappear. Without temples, there would be no more Judaism. With strong temples, Judaism thrives, grows, and evolves in healthy and vibrant ways. Within the walls and work of a temple, we celebrate life cycle events, from brises to baby namings to bar and bat mitzvah to confirmation to weddings to anniversaries to funerals. Within the walls and work of the temple, children learn the joys of Jewish festivals and Shabbat, master Hebrew prayer, understand Torah and God. Within the walls and work of the temple, we learn and practice visiting the sick, feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, redeeming the oppressed, fighting for justice and peace. Within the walls and work of a temple, we sharpen our minds, open our hearts, stretch our spirits, and sing our own Jewish songs of identity and purpose. As we approach the wonderful Festival of Lights, this coming Hanukkah time of dedication, may we all rededicate ourselves to the great work of exploring and advancing our higher Jewish values through our temples, and in this way, make the commitment to what truly matters in life. Hanukkah begins December 24th, and at Temple Emmanuel, we'll celebrate our greatest Hanukkah on earth, 18 Shine All Night, our pre-Hanukkah celebration next Sunday afternoon, December 11th at 4:30 p.m. It's a pre-Hanukkah festival that's free and open to all. To play us in this morning, we continue our musical preview with 613's Hanerot Halalu for Hanukkah. We light these lights for the miracle of redemption at this time of year in those days long ago.
Na, 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 na. For the glow of the candle, that they give us inside, for it had been in the temple, for the story we retell with pride, for the plight of our fathers, for the struggle endured to survive, for prevailing where some would not have bothered, to thrive. Hanerot Halalu, Anu Madlikin, Anu Madlikin al Hanisim, for aiming our fire and the miracle of light that lasted 8 nights and 8 days. We say Hanerot Halalu, Anu Madlikin, Anu Madlikin al Hanisim.
That was the Jewish a cappella group 613 singing Hanerot Halalu for the coming holiday of Hanukkah, now about 3 weeks away. Don't miss the greatest Hanukkah honor celebration at Temple Emmanuel next Sunday, December 11th at 4:30 p.m. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Israeli Major General Doron Almog, had a highly successful career in the IDF, served with distinction in multiple wars and as head of the Southern Command, and led a unit in the famous Entebbe rescue. But he received the Israel Prize this year for his extraordinary work building a rehabilitation village for handicapped young Israelis, and he did so in honor of his son, Iran. Hear his remarkable story when we return in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Hi, my name is Lauriella, and I'd like to tell you how you can help send children like me to a Jewish day school at no cost to you. Arizona allows its taxpayers to receive a tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations such as JETCO. JETCO is the only tuition organization solely dedicated to Jewish education in Tucson. JETCO provides scholarships to children who attend qualified private schools like Congregation Anshai Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, which educates students from grades K through 8th. You may give up to $1,087 for single tax filers and $2,173 for married couples who file jointly. Jewish education nurtures Jewish identity for generations of students like me, so please go online and visit our website at www.jetco.org or give JETCO a call at 647-8442. Again, that's 647-8442. And tell them Lauriella sent you.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. General Doron Almog is an Israeli military hero who also won the Israel Prize for an extraordinary venture in rehabilitation and assistance. We're delighted to have him here this morning. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning, Sam.
So tell us a little bit about what prompted you, a little bit of Iran's story, prompted you to get so deeply involved in assisting those who are challenged by what we used to call retardation, by mental incapacity, and by autism.
In one sentence, it's our son, our loved son, Iran. A child, a beautiful child who lived, unfortunately, only 23 years, passed away 10 years ago. A child who born with severe brain injury, never made eye contact, never had a sound.
Never said
Abba, dead, or mom. But I define him as the greatest professor of my life. He taught me about our community, about our society, about our values, about what is social responsibility. As Jews, we say always and educate people by sentence, Ve'avta le'recha kamocha, love your friend as love yourself. We say we all responsible one for another.
In military,
Kol Yisrael Aravim Zelazeh. We all responsible one for another. And as a matter of fact, I found and discovered that these children, the mentally, physically disabled, severely disabled, retarded, cognitively disabled, they are left behind by our society. They are enveloped by stigma and shame and stereotyped. And it was a shame for us as a community, as a society, as a people. And he told me, number one, he brought me to his position. Like, well, we say also as Jews, we say, don't judge your friend until you come to his place. But he brought me to judge everything from his position. Like, my dear father, look what happened. I born to my lifetime opportunity. I was given the name of your brother that was killed in the Yom Kippur War. Your loved brother that was shot by a Syrian tank, bleeding 7 days in the field, evacuated, dead already. My uncle, my hero uncle. Then I got my opportunity at the age of 8 months. I was diagnosed by psychologist who told you, I will never speak, I will permanently stay at the age of a few months. And she was right. So look at my opportunity. I'm unable to speak, I'm unable to do this.
The basic
things in life. I'm unable to dress myself, to wash myself, to eat by my own, nothing. I'm with diaper, I need your assistance on every single step. My dear father, are you ready? You may choose to be ashamed. You may choose to have guilt feeling. You may choose to put me overseas in some Christian or other family and never say, never mention you have retarded child. Right. Never. And like many others in Israel, our Prime Minister Golda Meir, born here in the United States in Milwaukee, she was our commander-in-chief at the Yom Kippur War, at the time that I was paratrooper company commander. She was the one to order us to hunt down terrorists after the Munich and
massacre.
I was one of the leaders. But also she was a grandma to Meira, Down syndrome daughter, granddaughter of Golda Meir. And Meira spoke. Meira gave interview after Golda passing and said, Golda never visited me. Golda was fully ashamed on my presence. Golda told my mom to never mention the Prime Minister of Israel having retarded granddaughter.
We will talk much more with Major General Doron Almog when we return in a few moments here on Two Jewish.
We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Rabbi.
You have a very wide range of ages in your clientele.
Yes, we do. Anywhere from 18 up to 90.
90. So people who are 90 decide they finally want to quit smoking.
Yes. They want to see their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren graduate high school and get married, go to college, that kind of thing.
It's incredible. What's the oldest person you've ever served?
Me personally, I had one that was 90. Last week, I had one that was 88. He's been with us for a couple of years and very, very pleased with how he quit, and his health is getting much better than it used to be.
You can breathe easier. You can smell things. You can taste things that you haven't been able to do so in years.
It's incredible. Where can people go to find out more information?
You can either visit us at our website at freedomsmokeusa.com, or you can call on our 800 number, 800-705-7013.
And we have 4 stores around the greater Tucson area. We're in Catalina, Sierra Vista, and we're even in southern Michigan.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of 4 activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award in 2016, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, or stream us from there, or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts, Top 10 in America in Moment Magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about classified information, and you started to tell an incredible story at the end of the show last week, at the end of your visit on the show last week, talking about when you were in Belgrade and the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, reading the cable to your boss. Maybe you can reconstruct that a little bit and take us further.
Right. So it was Christmas Eve, and I believe the year was 1979. And with trembling hands, I read this not only highly classified, but also very restricted distribution cable to my boss over the phone. And he tells me, yeah, exactly what I expected. Now, when you hang up, call the ministry, ask for the duty officer, say we want a meeting at the highest possible level first thing tomorrow morning. It's our Christmas Day, but it's not theirs, so they should all be available. So long story short, we got an appointment with the first deputy minister, which is pretty senior, for like 10 a.m., and Eagleburger was in the office at 9, and he dragged me along as a note taker and whatever. And it all went pretty much as predicted. And then you write up a cable telling Washington that you've delivered the message and here's the Yugoslav response, okay? Or they promise to get back to us in 24 hours, as the case may be. So that message is automatically classified as at the same level as the instruction cable, as the cable to which it refers, because you can't refer to a highly classified cable in something that's less classified and in the same restricted distribution mode for similar reasons. But one question we didn't raise yet that needs to be raised is, so how long is something classified?
Yeah.
And who decides that? And how can it be declassified eventually? So I don't know how it is now because it's many years since I've worked for the government. But in the old days, the person who originally classified it also put a date for declassification on it. So it was like classified for the next 20 years. The interesting thing was limited official use. The lowest category that was like the embassy phone book didn't have a date for declassification.
So that's never declassified.
Technically, you know, you'd never want somebody to know who was working in the U.S. Embassy in Paris in 1986. So that would never be declassified. However, any document can be declassified by a higher authority, as long as the person has like more rank and more pull and presumably better judgment than the person who originally classified it, then he or she can declare a document declassified early. The other thing is, with the Freedom of Information Act, people who are doing research, who have a claim against the government or whatever, if they make a case for access to documents, the government can't say, oh, that's classified forever and ever. It can't stonewall you. It can say, we can't release this for another 18 months because of an ongoing operation that might be jeopardized. You have to have a specific reason for deferring the release of information petitioned under the Freedom of Information Act, no matter how highly classified it is. So it's very complex. And long story short, almost every piece of paper with which a senior official deals every day is classified to one degree or another. So nobody thinks in terms of, ooh, that's classified, because it all
Everything
is.
Everything is.
Right.
So, and that would then extend not only to paper, but as you said, anything we printed out. So emails, texts, virtually anything that crossed your desk, your computer screen, your laptop, your phone, would be classified at some level or another.
Right.
Fascinating. And who knows when it'll be declassified.
Right, exactly.
Thanks, Tom. We welcome Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Good morning, Oshrat. Boker Tov.
Good.
So there was a little bit of an election here not too long ago. And while people have trouble understanding the American Electoral College, including members of my own family, in which you can win the popular election but lose the Electoral College and not be president, the Israeli system is really quite different. And it has changed a little over the last 15 or 20 years, one way and then back another. Can you tell us a little bit about the whole Israeli electoral process?
Yes. Yeah, so first of all, there is many differences. There is more than two big, you know, party. Usually it's like last election, it was 10 different parties.
10 different parties had seats in Knesset?
Yeah. Those who passed the electoral share, I think it's their shoulder. Oh, I forgot the Achuz HaSima.
Right, they've got
electoral. More than 3.25.
Right,
yeah, that's
okay.
The word. So 3.25%. So only 10 parties passed this percent.
No, there may be many other parties.
Oh, yeah, more than 10. I can tell you, more than 10. I stopped count after 10 when I prepared.
10's
you know.
Enough.
So, and also, like, as a preparation for the election, there is some of the reshimot, some of the
lists,
parties,
the
list,
party list, they prepare a list.
Some of them being prepared, and some of them there is primaries.
Like in an American system.
Only, and you will be surprised, only three of them have primaries, the Likud, Avoda, and Bayit Yehudi. All the rest of them, Yesh Atid, and all the rest of them are just...
Yesh Atid, it's just they come up with their list.
Yeah, and Lieberman, and the Arab. Yeah, yeah, all of them just preparing list and submit that. I think they have, by the law, 3 months to submit this list. And then there is a very short period, I think 12 days, between 10 to 12 days, to do the all the election tamula.
The propaganda?
I don't
publicity,
know.
The
publicity.
Election campaign, right.
Yeah, it's 10
sure.
days, 10 to 12 days. And by the law that was in 1958, every 4 years there is election. It's supposed to be election on the third Tuesday of Cheshvan, mm-hmm. unless it was Shana Meuberet a year before, and then it's anyway.
So if it was a leap year the year before,
yeah, and then it's the first Tuesday. But anyway, earlier. You will be okay. surprised to know that only four times since 1958 it was the government or the it was on time. Okay.
That the
it was on time.
In other words, you mean where the government served out the whole term?
No,
of the
this
election?
Is different. But okay. There is in the law in the Knesset. This is the first law of the of Chok Yesod. That's the first basic law of Israel.
Foundational law.
Foundation law, right. And it's the and in the law it's include the date that it's supposed to be the election.
Okay, so it's the equivalent of a constitutional law. There's no
yes.
constitution in Israel,
yes.
so it's that. You know, the basic law.
So only four times since then it was on time.
So it's
rarely
late.
It was 4 years, but also if it's not 4 years, the next Knesset can serve more than 4 years.
Has that ever happened?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Because usually what happens is
once.
The government has to change and they need to call an early election because it doesn't have enough support or they
yeah,
feel
there
like
is three different reasons we can talk about. Like different time.
But
like
the official length of a Knesset is 4 years?
4 years,
four
yeah.
years, okay. Yeah. So like an American presidential mm-hmm. cycle, mm-hmm. but not like Congress, which is quite different. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we'll continue this conversation about the Israeli electoral process, which is quite complicated, next week.
Yeah.
Thanks, Oshra.
Thank you.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy.
Boker Tov. Good morning.
Good morning. Tzedakah is such a central Jewish concept,
yes.
the notion of creating justice through charitable giving. Mm. We try to teach it from the beginning with kids.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to instill this desire, need, fundamental
such a
Jewish
critical,
value?
Such a critical Jewish value, like you're saying, a fundamental Jewish value. And, you know, as kids are growing up, they're not really inclined from the get-go to be empathetic developmentally. Children need to take care of their own needs, and you see that behavior in very young kids.
Well, I mean, they say that babies are the single most egotistical creatures in the world. Like, they only know what they need.
I think there are a lot of good jokes in there, but yeah, you know, and so...
Except for rabbis, possibly, of course.
So there's the need for food, right? There's a need for shelter, and of course, there's then later on the need for love and attention and so forth. So, right, as kids are growing up, we have an obligation to be teaching them things like empathy, seeing outside of themselves, seeing where there are needs in their friends, in their world, in their families, and you start in small stages and build out from there. So the concept of charitable giving expands into I think a lot of different directions. It isn't just pulling from your pocket and donating money. There's giving of oneself. There's understanding that somebody's hurt and needs a hand, or somebody might need help in a classroom setting, working on an assignment or struggling with a handful of material, whatever. So building that vision, that empathy in students is a key part of getting going the psychology of generosity and of sharing and caring about other people. And then you get into more tangible kinds of things, bringing in spare coins for the, the Pushkin that's in the classroom, the charity box, the tzedakah box, and specific other kinds of events that happen in a school cycle, bringing in food for the hungry, having a specific fundraiser. Recently, we did one. It was the Battle of the Booty. We had a pirate theme going, and we did a little bit of a penny war.
You got to spell that word very carefully.
Bootty.
Okay.
The Buccaneers
were
out there.
I think it's Bootty. Well, I don't know.
Did I get
anyway,
it wrong?
Either way.
Now I'm in trouble.
So the pirates, you brought in booty.
But it's inspiring, through a competition, inspiring the spirit of giving. Mm-hmm. So lots of things that you do as kids are growing up through the ages to help instill the value of charity.
And then maybe next time we can talk about how tzedakah expands. Because sometimes it starts from parents teaching kids. Sometimes, actually, it's our kids that teach us.
Mm, very nice. I have a great example of that to share with you next weekend.
We'll talk next week. Thanks, John. When we return on To Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Moshe, the farmer, wakes up on a beautiful spring day, walks out his front door, and steps on a rake. It flips up and hits him square in the face. Wham! Dazed and confused, he staggers and reaches his hand out to lean on a wall, but it's not a wall, it's a bull. It's his prize-winning bull, who doesn't like it one bit. The bull chases the farmer all over until Moshe dives onto his tractor for protection, but his hand accidentally hits the lever and the dang thing starts. Only he's not in the driver's seat, instead he's hanging off the side from one suspender of his overalls, getting dragged through the mud all over the field until the tractor finally runs out of gas. As he's lying there in the mud, beat up, the bull comes back, sniffs him, and poops right in his face. Moshe looks up and says, "Why, God, why are you doing this to me?" The sky parts, and a booming voice says, "Moshe, it's like this. There's something about you I don't like." That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. The urge to journey into the unknown is a major motivation. We saw it with Abraham a few weeks ago. We find it in the lives of most of our Jewish ancestors, and we encounter it perhaps most powerfully in the story of this week's great Torah portion of Vayetze. At the start of the tale, Jacob leaves his family and home, both of which happen to be in Beersheba, and journeys towards Sumeria, towards, well, today's Turkey, Iraq, the Pale of Settlement. He has nothing with him at all, not even a bedroll. He's forced to lay his head on a rock to sleep. In this state of extremis, God brings him a promise in the form of a famous dream, a ladder going up to heaven, angels ascending and descending, a pledge of family, land, and ultimate safety and security. Jacob, our forefather, wakes from his dream and says pointedly, "Hey, God was in this place, and I didn't know it." That's something all of us can say from time to time, isn't it? An incredible message of awareness from the true father of our people. But there's another important message in Vayetze. It is that Jacob must leave everything familiar in order to allow him to find God's presence. Throughout human history, religions have been founded by individuals who left ordinary lives and places and wandered off into the wilderness, usually the desert. Abraham, Jacob, and Moses are the most obvious Jewish pioneers. Buddha, Jesus, and Muhammad fit the same pattern. In order to become whom we seek to be spiritually, we must begin by leaving what we already know. And then, when we finally encounter God in the wilderness, we learn that God was back there at home too. We just weren't quite ready to notice the fact. Of all the major figures in Genesis, Jacob is the most interesting. He's complex, clever, tricky, bold, resourceful, and he has a rather spectacularly complicated love life, all of which take off in this week's Torah portion. But it's that moment when he first realizes how little he really knows that makes him most human, most like us. It's his journey into the wilderness alone with nothing that helps us understand spirituality is not found best by repeating what is most comfortable. Often, we too struggle to figure out where we can find God. If we're lucky and aware, we will come to realize that God is in this place, indeed in every place. All we have to do is go out into the wilderness for a bit, open our eyes, and learn to accept that fact. When we return on to Jewish, our guest, Israeli Major General Doron Almog, winner of the 2016 Israel Prize for his extraordinary work with autistic and mentally challenged Israelis, will explain how a professional warrior, a leader at Entebbe and in the Yom Kippur War and during the Lebanon campaigns, became focused on helping the least privileged members of society in Israel. Don't miss his remarkable story when we return here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
At one point a few years ago, comedian Jackie Mason joked that there were more Jews in President Obama's cabinet than in Prime Minister Netanyahu's. While, from what we've heard, it seems very unlikely that this will be the direction that President-elect Donald Trump goes with his cabinet picks, he did announce the first Jewish member last week. Trump named longtime banker and former Goldman Sachs executive Steve Mnuchin as Treasury Secretary, turning to a campaign loyalist and fundraiser for the incoming administration's top economic cabinet post. Mnuchin, who is 53 years old, played a behind-the-scenes role in Trump's election, helped oversee the creation of a network of small donors that let the campaign compete successfully against the better-funded Hillary Clinton operation. Mnuchin's longtime Wall Street ties, his father spent his whole career at Goldman Sachs, make him a traditional pick for Treasury. The choice contrasts with Trump's message that economic and political elites have left the country damaged, but Mnuchin's establishment profile will sit more comfortably with Senate Republicans who decide confirmation on the nominee. Mark Mnuchin has a history of donating more money to Democrats than Republicans, actually. Nonetheless, he signed on to Trump's campaign and took the post of National Finance Chairman. If confirmed by the Senate, Mnuchin will join a list of prominent bankers who made similar moves from Wall Street to Washington, including two of his former bosses at Goldman Sachs, Henry Paulson and Robert Rubin, who were both top Goldman executives before joining the department. Treasury Secretary is the chief navigator of the nation's economy. In another announcement, that of Elaine Chao for Secretary of Transportation, well, it disappointed many of us who wished to see Chris Christie named Secretary of Transportation since he had so much experience with bridges and traffic as governor of New Jersey. That would have been just perfect. In other news, dozens of firefighters from across the U.S. put their lives on hold, leaving behind jobs and families over Thanksgiving to help subdue the wildfires that swept Israel the past week. We're just firefighters. When guys hear about a situation like this one, where the Israelis are working as hard as they can, they want to come help, said Billy Hirth, a Protestant who retired last year after a 24-year career as a firefighter in Arlington, Texas, and has been coordinating the American effort from Jerusalem. It's a brotherhood, he said. Firemen are firemen. Hundreds of fires flared up in Israel last week, forcing tens of thousands of people to flee. 32,000 acres of forested brush burned, along with hundreds of homes and businesses. Israeli authorities said the fire started because of an unseasonably long dry spell and high winds, but they were then exacerbated by Palestinian Arab and Arab-Israeli arsonists. A week ago Friday, Israel's Public Security Ministry formally requested firefighting help from the Emergency Volunteers Project, a network of almost 1,000 American volunteers and professional first responders. By Saturday night, with the fires coming under control, the firefighters started arriving at Ben-Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv. They were schlepped to overstretched fire departments around the country. Some went to work battling the remaining wildfires and those that flared up the next day, while others chipped in with routine firefighting. The Israeli stations remain on high alert. Firefighters have worked grueling shifts over the last week. Many of the firefighters have been working for over 90 hours straight, said Oren Shishitsky, a spokesman for Israel's Fire and Rescue Authority. Because most of the Americans were trained in Israel, they are familiar with how we operate. They were able to easily relieve some of the burden on the crews, whether with regular fire response in local districts or in extinguishing the remaining fires. I cannot emphasize enough our appreciation that these guys dropped everything around the Thanksgiving holiday to come here. This is a heartwarming reminder of the many wonderful connections between Israel and America. We had a couple of Tucson firefighters who are part of the program here on Too Jewish about a year ago, as well as some of their Israeli counterparts. Kol hakavod to the American firefighters who helped Israel at this crucial time. And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews around the world.
We are delighted to welcome back to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Major General Doron Almog was an Israeli military hero and leader, head of the Southern Front, tremendous amount of experience in combat, and according to some was in line to become the next chief of staff of the Israeli military, which is an extraordinarily important position in Israel, and chose instead to devote his life and his efforts to assisting both his son and all who are damaged and need a rehabilitation center for those with mental limitation, autism, and severe deficiencies. Tell us a little bit about your military experience. It really was extraordinary. You lost a brother in the Yom Kippur War. You talked about that, Iran, for whom your son was named. Mm-hmm. But you were involved in the Entebbe rescue. You were involved in hunting the Munich terrorists. Give us a little bit about your military background.
I joined the military as a paratrooper. I joined a paratrooper. I started my service.
And everybody should understand paratroopers is one of the top units in Israel.
The elite fighters. And from the first months, I participated in battles, many battles, hundreds of battles in my life. And but the main issue is the commitment of every Israeli soldier. You swear at day one. You swear to be ready to give your life to protect your country, to save your friends, and that's all about, you know. It 35 years service, battles. Luckily, I'm alive. I lost many of my friends. My first battle at Shedwan Island was a mission to bring Egyptian commando soldiers to Israel in order to allow the government to maintain a package deal with the Egyptian. It's a time of, we call it the war of attrition along the Suez Canal after the glorious 67.
After the Six-Day War, before the Yom Kippur
after
War.
After the Yom Kippur, the 67, the Six-Day War.
Right.
And unfortunately, we had prisoners kept by the Egyptian. By Egyptian raids crossing the Suez Canal, kidnapped Israeli soldiers. Some were pilots. Who shut down over the delta near Cairo while attacking Egyptian positions, and were held by Egyptian in prison. So our mission was to raid the Shedwan Island. It's an island populated by a commando, Egyptian battalion commando, about 400 Egyptian, very experienced soldiers. And our mission to raid, like the movie Apocalypse Now, with helicopters, 9 a.m. in the morning, get a close air support, fighting from position to position, kill. The mission was to kill as little as possible to bring the maximum prisoners.
Right.
Yeah. So we moved, or we shout to the Egyptian, they are the last in Egypt, we call them to surrender. And we took 65. But this battle, 2 days battle in this island, I lost my company commander and two good friends. We lost 3. We brought 65 prisoners. The Israeli government maintained a deal with the Egyptian, brought back some of our prisoners before the Yom Kippur. And later, operation to hunt down the terrorists after Munich and the Yom Kippur War, which was a trauma for the State of Israel. We were surprised by simultaneous attack, the Syrian in the north and Egyptian in the south, Shabbat, Saturday.
And Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur, the holiest day for Jews. And that was really earthquake for the State of Israel. There are moments in this war, I thought, I won't see the seconds later. The turning point of the Yom Kippur was October 14, while I was attacked by more than 100 Egyptian tanks and Egyptian soldiers, and I was deep at the Egyptian territory, a group of about 50 paratroopers, and we thought that that's our last battle. We had no anti-tank ammunition or very little. So I briefed my officers, that's our last battle. And three hours later, 25 Egyptian tanks were burned. The Egyptians started running away back to Suez Canal. That was the greatest victory in the Yom Kippur War, and the turning point, because at that specific day, the Egyptians wanted to get to stage 2 offensive, from holding the Suez Canal at first stage, then second stage, with 4 division to get to penetrate Sinai and continue their effort
to destroy Israel.
At the end, it destroyed Israel, but they had some limited targets, like holding few centimeters of the east side of Suez Canal, which they succeeded. But at that specific day, the October 14, 1973, we destroyed along the line between Israel and Egypt, we destroyed 250 Egyptian tanks. And my place at the Wadi Mabuk was one of the greatest victories and the turning point. And later we crossed Suez Canal October 15, October 16. And at the end, October 24, imagine, United States was attacked by the Japanese at the December 7, 1940, a surprise attack.
Right.
It took United States, it took a few years, to overcome. And from defensive to offensive, for the State of Israel, from being fully surprised, from offensive to
defensive to offensive. Right.
Yeah. It took hours. Calling the reserve, a national effort, fighting for our existence. Our Minister of Defense, Moshe Dayan, at that time, at the second day, said he thinks there's real danger for the third temple.
The third.
But we were the fighter, we were ready to give our life to protect the only Jewish state in the world. So this is the Yom Kippur. After the Yom Kippur, or the end of the war, I arrived to telephone. That was not a cellular age. And the rumor said in my town, Rishon LeZion, that me and my brother was killed. My parents expected the worst. And my mother raised the telephone. I was afraid to ask what about my brother. And after a few minutes, I asked. She said, we lost Iran, my brother. We have no Iran anymore. Mm. I came home. There was no funeral. Our losses at the Yom Kippur War were buried in temporary cemeteries. He was buried in Norse. The funeral happened 11 months later, after the Yom Kippur. So there was nothing to do at home. I left my company. I lost 4 soldiers, 11 wounded, critically wounded. I visited them in hospital, but I continued to the Golan Heights. I found this burned tank. I did pictures with my Kodak camera, black and white. I have 52 pictures, horrible pictures. I built a memorial near his burned tank. I found some of his belongings. I continued to hospital and investigated the soldiers. And then I learned to know that he was shot by Syrian tank 50 meters in the front while shooting 3 Syrian tanks on his left side. I found the Syrian burned tank on the left side. And he was the only survivor from the crew of his tank. He flown outside, bleeding near the tank, shouting for assistance. No one arrived. And he was evacuated by later known, very well known in Israel, Professor Yaakov Ne'eman, was Minister of Treasury, Minister of Justice. He evacuated my brother. He also later, just a year ago, he recommended me for the Israel Prize, which is the highest recommendation.
It's the highest honor in the state of Israel. It's like the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It's a tremendous honor.
Yeah, so I was rageous after the Yom Kippur. Rageous and frustrated and
because
painful.
No one had come back for Iraq.
Because, number one, painting the loss of my brother. I loved him very much. He was dating with my wife. Now, he was dating with Didi. At that time, before the war, he told me, Didi is the most beautiful girl in our town, but she's for you. You know, no one knew that a war would come, he would be killed. And friends and brothers talking about life. And now I'm married to Didi, but I loved him very much. And my nightmares is about dreaming always that I'm in operation trying to evacuate my brother, never succeed. And until now, you know, is the memories of my brother is still so alive inside me. I walk in the street and see tank commander, lieutenant. And many times later, when I was the commander of the South Command, I faced situation of burning tanks, and I arrived to the field in Gaza, and I lost tank crews, and I also did the eulogy for those who were killed in action under my command, and it always getting back to the loss of my brother.
Sure. I want to thank Doron Almog for a fantastic visit. We didn't even talk about Entebbe or so many other things we could.
May I say, one thing about Entebbe?
Sure.
Yeah. We flew to Entebbe to save 105 Israeli hostages that were kept 1 week from their life as hostages under threat of 7 terrorists. But in our world and in Israel, we have hostages in our society, those who are handicapped and crippled and mentally and physically challenged. We need to stretch our hand. We need to rescue them. So being a fighter in this rescue operation, it's up to us, every human being, powerfully, healthy, may stretch an hand to someone that needs his assistance and be a fighter like the soldiers in Entebbe. And you know, saving one life is saving the whole world.
I want to thank Doron Almog for a great visit. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Daniel Torday, author of The Last Flight of Poxel West, winner of the National Jewish Book Award. And, of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website and friend us on Facebook. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes as part of our pre-Hanukkah musical preview. It's Matis Yahu's lovely Hanukkah song, Miracle. The Greatest Hanukkah on Earth 18 show, Shine All Night, is coming up at Temple Emmanuel, December 11th, just a week from today. It's free and open to everyone. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Just living in a miracle, candles on my vehicle, 8 nights, gonna shine invincible, no longer be divisible, born through the struggle, keep on moving through all this hustle, head up, head down, through all of the bustle, New York City, wanna flex your muscle, look so down, look so puzzled, huddle around your fire through all the rubble, bound to stumble and fall, but my strength comes not from man at all, bound to stumble and fall, but my strength comes not from man at all. Tomorrow, wipe away your tears and your sorrow. Sunrise in the sky, like an arrow. No need to worry, no need to cry. Light up your mind, no longer be blind. Him who searches will find. Leave your problems behind. He will shine like a fire in the sky. What's the reason we're alive?
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.